Welcome to Mastering Logical Fallacies, the online course. This is the audio version of the online course presented at MasteringLogicalFallacies.com. For the complete learning experience, including multimedia presentations, quizzes, assignments, peer-to-peer discussion, instructor interaction, and more, enroll as a student at MasteringLogicalFallacies.com. My name is Beau Bennett, and I am your instructor for this course. An analogy is basically a way to point out a similarity in two different things, two different concepts or ideas. A weak analogy is basically when the similarities aren't really that similar. Now, a weak analogy in itself isn't really a fallacy, it's just a weak analogy. It becomes a fallacy when it's used to prove or disprove an argument. That's when it becomes an actual fallacy. Now, in my book, I defined it in such a way where you compare how much it's like to how much it's not like, how much the two ideas are like each other versus not like each other. And if they're more unlike each other, then you have a weak analogy. But I want to modify that because I didn't specify an important part, and that's like or dislike in relevant information. Now, in the context of an argument, the relevant information is the claim that's actually being made. Let's look at an example, and this will become more clear. Here's a funny example from an anonymous source. Cleaning the house while your kids are still home is like shoveling while it's still snowing. So obviously that's meant to be humorous, but there is an implicit claim in there, which is essentially you can do a lot of work but not accomplish much because the work gets undone. So you could take that claim and you could put it in both scenarios, cleaning your house while your kids are at home and shoveling the snow while it's still snowing. And you could see, at least from my perspective, that that's actually very true. So it would not be a weak analogy. Now let's just talk about an analogy's rhetorical value for a moment. If I were just to say that it's pointless cleaning my house while my kids are home, because every time I pick something up, they just keep on messing it again, and I'm constantly doing things, and the house is getting no cleaner. All right, that's not very interesting. It's kind of boring, and it doesn't have much of an impact. But the analogy has a great impact, and not just for people who have children, but also for people who have ever shoveled snow while it's snowing. Or just people who know what that's like, or can imagine what it's like, shoveling snow while it's snowing outside. What an analogy does is that it connects two different ideas. Something that you don't know with something that you do know. It's an excellent learning tool. Also, if you add humor to it, and you make the analogy humorous or even funny, laugh out loud funny, it could be more effective and people will tend to believe it more simply because it makes them laugh and it makes them feel good. So use analogies when possible. They're an excellent communication tool, but also do not abuse them by committing the weak analogy fallacy and making a poor analogy when you're trying to make a point or trying to prove a point or disprove one. The non sequitur is a very common fallacy, otherwise known as, yeah, that doesn't follow. In more formal terms, it's when the conclusion does not follow from the premises or the premises. So basically, if somebody is making a claim, and they support their claim, and it sounds good, they're providing plenty of evidence for the claim that they're making, that is the premise that they're supporting. They support the premise, and then they go on to say, and therefore, X. And X has absolutely nothing to do with the claim that they just made. Or the two aren't connected logically. That's why it's more commonly known as it doesn't follow. The conclusion does not follow from the premises. There's a couple ways to look at this, because sometimes people can reverse it and it could get hidden. The conclusion and the premises could get mixed up and you're not sure which is which. But remember, when you're making a claim or you're making an argument, the conclusion could come first and then you could say the premises, or the other way around. So for example, I could say, I'm going to eat because I'm hungry. So I'm going to eat is the conclusion. The premises is because I'm hungry. I'm hungry, therefore I'm going to eat. That's a way to flip those two things around. So if I said, I'm hungry, therefore I'm going to watch TV, then that wouldn't make sense. That's a non sequitur. It doesn't follow. This is a very simple example because that's not essentially an argument. I'm not making an argument. I'm just making a claim. And whether I'm going to watch TV and I'm hungry, it really probably doesn't matter to many people at all. But I had to simplify it just so you could see the formula and basically just what it's about. A non sequitur is when something doesn't follow. Now, if somebody does make an argument and then they follow it up with a conclusion that doesn't follow from the premises, from the argument that they just made, basically, your best response to that is just to ask them, how exactly does that follow? And let them try to explain in their own words how it follows. And if they say, I don't know what you mean, just repeat the question and add a little bit more clarity and say, how does your conclusion follow from your premises? And then you could even put their argument in its place and say, well, you just told me that X, and you just said because of X, therefore Y, but I don't see the connection between X and Y. Can you explain that in a little bit more detail? So instead of just simply calling a non sequitur, it might be the case that you truly don't understand. And therefore, if you call them out on a fallacy, and really it was not a fallacy, it was just a misunderstanding on your part, you could look stupid. So I would reserve any kind of fallacious judgment until you ask for clarification. Once you ask for the clarification, and the person tries to explain, and perhaps they're stuttering all over the place, and they're not sure how to answer, or they're dodging the bullet and pulling a red herring, or if basically they don't give you a satisfactory answer, then you could call them out on the non sequitur, and that's perfectly legitimate and a good strategy. Let's talk about the extended analogy. This fallacy is going to sound familiar because it is very much like the non sequitur. It's a form of the non sequitur, actually. But it has to do with an analogy. Basically, it's suggesting that two things, both analogous to a third thing, are therefore analogous to each other. And that's a problem. I want to use the example from my book because I think it's a good example. This analogy has to do with comparing fruitarians to vegetarians. If you don't know, a fruitarian is somebody who only eats fruit because they believe that vegetables have feelings, and eating, say, carrots would be slaughtering carrots. At least that's what I believe fruitarians are. I don't know, maybe fruitarians just eat fruit for some other reason. I don't know. But let's stick with that, because that works well with this example. So if I were to say that fruitarians are against slaughtering animals for food, vegetarians are against slaughtering animals for food, fruitarians are crazy, therefore vegetarians are crazy. That would be a prime example of the extended analogy fallacy. Because my conclusion is vegetarians are crazy. How did I get to that conclusion? Well, I simply established that fruitarians are like vegetarians in that they are both against slaughtering animals for food. Then I just came out and stated explicitly in a third premise that fruitarians were crazy. I didn't have any justification for this, but that's not really even important at this point. I just said fruitarians are crazy, and now I'm saying, therefore, vegetarians are crazy. It's kind of funny because you think, or most people would follow this logic, and they would kind of get tricked into thinking that there is some kind of valid connection. But if you're trained in logic and you're thinking about these things, you could easily spot that, wait a minute, there's a complete disconnect here. It's a non sequitur. We're saying that fruitarians are crazy, and that is unrelated to the first two premises. So why did we even throw that in there? And then we're concluding that vegetarians are crazy based on that last premise that is unsubstantiated and unfounded, unwarranted. So what we need to do is we need to ask the question, why? Why are fruitarians crazy? Now, if I were to say, well, fruitarians are crazy because they are against slaughtering animals for food. Well, that's silly, but it's valid to argue that point. So what I would need to do to make this a valid argument, I would need to insert that premises in this line of premises here. So I would have to say that vegetarians are against slaughtering animals for food. Fruitarians are against slaughtering animals for food. Anyone against slaughtering animals for food is crazy. And then I could conclude, therefore, vegetarians are crazy. And I could also conclude vegetarians and fruitarians are crazy. Because I'm associating against slaughtering animals for food with this idea of being crazy. But that's not what is going on in the argument. In the argument, there is no justification for why fruitarians are crazy. And if I were to press myself, since I wrote the argument, in asking why are fruitarians crazy, it would be because they believe that vegetables have feelings, which is nowhere in the premises that claim is being made. So I am just throwing in there that fruitarians are crazy. They're crazy for a completely different reason that has nothing to do with vegetarians, but yet I'm concluding that vegetarians are crazy because they are like fruitarians in that they are against slaughtering animals for food, which is completely rational. So as you can see, there's a lot of problems with that line of argumentation, and that is an example of the extended analogy. Let's look at another example. Let's say that this is actually one that's pretty common out there, that atheists don't believe in any gods. That would be a premise. The second premise would be Stalin didn't believe in any gods. Again, another premise, a true premise, and as was the first. Now we could come to a third premise and say Stalin was a genocidal maniac, and I think most people would agree with that. So there's, of course, it's subjective, but it's still, most people wouldn't argue too hard against something like that. So far we have three premises that we could all agree upon. And now we conclude, therefore, atheists are genocidal maniacs. Okay, something went wrong here. What went wrong was this whole idea of an extended analogy. Because we are saying that atheists are like Stalin in that they don't believe in any gods. So in that way, they are alike. And now we're saying that Stalin was a genocidal maniac. But why was he a genocidal maniac? And here's where the problem is. That he was a genocidal maniac, one could argue, because of committing genocide. And because of the things he did, not because of his disbelief in any gods. Now that's, somebody could actually make that argument. Somebody could, and it has been done, somebody could say not believing in any gods will make you a genocidal maniac. Or, I mean, that's a crazy argument, but they could make the argument that that's a contributing factor to his actions. I would strongly disagree with that and argue against it, but it could be made. It's not irrational to make that argument. What would need to be done in that case is the person would have to establish some kind of causality or even some kind of correlation with being a genocidal maniac and disbelief in any gods. And of course, people have been looking for that link for decades now in social science, and no such link has been found, not just with being a genocidal maniac, but with morality in general. So that kind of causation or even correlation has not been established, and therefore it's completely and totally fallacious. But you can take one of these arguments of extended analogy and you can turn it into a legitimate argument, as we've seen in the first two examples, by establishing some kind of causality or correlation between the different premises. so it flows, like we did in, for example, the first one when we said fruitarians are against slaughtering animals for food. We could say that anybody against slaughtering animals for food is crazy, therefore fruitarians are crazy. That's a condensed version of what I said earlier. So when somebody commits this fallacy, be sure to ask why. Why does the conclusion follow from the premises? And let them explain. And if they try to explain, and it really is an extended analogy fallacy, then they're going to have an incredibly difficult time doing it. And the fallacy should be very clear. And a fallacy worthy of mention in this lesson is very similar to the other ones that we've been talking about, and this is the ad Hitlerum fallacy. It's a very specific form. If we look at the non sequitur, a more specific form of that would be the extended analogy, and a specific form of the extended analogy with slight modification is the ad Hitlerum. And I'll get to that slight modification in a little bit. So essentially, the ad Hitlerum fallacy is also known as kind of playing the Hitler card, playing the Nazi card. It's the idea that you're connecting their argument in some way, or the person, or what the person supports, to either the Nazi party or Hitler himself. And unlike the extended analogy, it doesn't even have to be in a non-related way. This is one of the ways the ad Hitlerum fallacy has evolved over the years. Instead of just a very specific form of the extended analogy that uses Hitler, now it's more, depending on who you ask and the source, it can be more of just any connection to Hitler whatsoever. So if you say that Hitler believed in genocide and you believe in genocide, therefore you are like Hitler, on the surface, that makes complete sense because Hitler was kind of known for his genocide, and therefore, if there's somebody else who is known for their genocide, the two are certainly alike. But the moment you bring Hitler into it, anybody who has even a little bit of training in debate, in argumentation, and logic, automatically this Hitler alarm will go off in their brains and they'll call fallacy. Very often, this is an act of desperation on the part of the person mentioning Hitler or trying to connect the idea or the person with Hitler. And if you are not trained in logic or reasoning, argumentation, this is very effective. This is a very effective technique to sort of poison the well. If anybody is related to Hitler or the Nazi Party in any way whatsoever, even the crazy way of saying, well, you know, Bill has a mustache, and you know who else had a mustache? Adolf Hitler. So, and you don't even have to say, therefore, Bill is like Hitler. You could just make that connection. And yeah, it's probably funny to us because we could actually see the blatant error here in the logic and the reasoning. However, it is a form of poisoning the well where people are mentally connecting Bill and Hitler together on the fact that they both have a mustache, and somehow magically some of Hitler's very bad qualities get transferred over to Bill in the minds of people who are untrained at logic. Now, here's something kind of interesting. There seems to be an ongoing debate for many years, and you could Google it and you could look at the chains and the dates, between atheists and Christians trying to get Hitler out of their party, out of their camp. The Christians will insist that Hitler was an atheist, and the atheists will insist that Hitler was a Christian. They both throw facts and figures and quotes to try to support their beliefs. But the argument itself is based on a total fallacy. It's this fallacy that because Hitler was either a Christian or an atheist, that's why he was bad. And this takes us back to the extended analogy. So even if one side were to win and demonstrate demonstrably that Hitler was either an atheist or Hitler was either a Christian, it wouldn't even matter. It doesn't mean that all Christians are like Hitler or all atheists are like Hitler. It would simply mean that Hitler was an atheist or Hitler was a Christian. And that's it. So I'd like to conclude this lesson with a little piece of advice for you out there. If you are involved in argumentation and you do want to relate something via analogy to a fascist dictator, just pick anybody besides Hitler, someone else that people know, and it will be effective, assuming that it is a valid analogy and not an extended analogy or a weak analogy. And you won't get called out for the ad Hitlerum, because there is no ad Stalinum or ad Pol Potum. They just don't exist because Hitler is used so often. So you could be just as effective using another dictator or another party without actually committing this fallacy.